You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Is that yours?
Don't touch it. It's Uncle Rico's.
What's it for?
It's a time machine, Napoleon. You bought it online.
You're right.
It works, Napoleon. You don't even know.
Have you guys tried it yet?
No. So are you ready?
Yeah, hold on. I forgot to put in the crystals. Okay, turn it on. It's a piece of crap. It doesn't work.
Well, I could have told you that.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
Mr. McDowell.
What is it?
Sir, I was wondering, did you happen to catch the professional football contest on television last night?
No, I did.
Oh, it was most exhilarating. The Giants of New York took on the Packers of Green Bay. And in the end, the Giants triumphed by kicking an oblong ball made of pigskin through a big H. It was a most ripping victory.
Son, I'm just going to tell you this one time.
Yes, sir.
You want to keep working here. Stay off the drugs.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It is Thursday, January 3rd, 2013. Oh, my God. And this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob. That's Chez. We're brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. I'll just say the name of the website again, BubbleGenius.com. Go there. Buy all of your stuff. All of your... If you missed the holiday season and you're looking for someone to something to get for all of the people you forgot, just go to Bubble Genius and pick up all, you know, bath and body products. They're the best. They're the best. What can I say? They're the best. Hey, Chet.
You really hate me, don't you? You hate me so much for that Tolkien comment I left on your blog. Oh, my God. You were just dripping with animosity.
Yeah, well, here's my question.
It was like Patton Oswalt said, man. It was just delicious. It was that good. That was how hateful your comeback was.
Well, look, I posted a thing on the blog, and you know I do this all the time. I post random stuff. I post like things about robots and the Civil War, and sometimes movie trailers and things like that. In fact, we both do. So I posted a thing about Tolkien. Today happens to be Tolkien's birthday. He would have been 121 years old if he had lived.
If Tolkien were 121 years old right now, then I would truly appreciate him. If he had lived to be 121, that would be impressive.
It's all that pipe smoking.
That's right.
So yeah, I posted a thing about Tolkien because, well, there's a movie out called The Hobbit, and you know, and it's very rich. It's, you know, the whole Tolkien universe, the whole universe of Middle Earth, is very rich, and it's full of linguistics and history and mythology and things like that all mixed up into this fantasy world. And there was just a post about it on Andrew Sullivan's site, And so I thought it was fascinating, posted it on the blog. You get on there like hipsterman, and you're like, dude, really?
But it only because it was so detailed, like, God, just picking apart every little nuance of Tolkien's Aspergerian obsession with language, or you know, the language of Middle Earth. And yeah, it's like it carried on for so long that finally I'm like, all right, man, I was good at the first like paragraph and a half.
I reference you to June 10th, 2012, in which you wrote like a 2,000 word analysis of Prometheus, sir.
Yeah, I know. There was that. And you know what the sad thing is? I deserve so much for even bothering to get into Prometheus because it was such an average movie.
April 17th, April 19th, April 30th, March 20th, June 10th, July 22nd.
Wait, what is... what is with you? Did you really... You did. You actually... That proves to me just how insanely fact-oriented and once again, to use the word twice in you know, a very short amount of time, Aspergerian you are when it comes to, like, you know, you always got to have your little nugget that you just throw out there.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I have every single time that you wrote about Prometheus. Take that, sir.
Of everything that happened in 2012, your biggest disappointment of the year was the movie Prometheus.
It was, because it's a thing I was looking forward to, and it turned out to be, you know, very, very well less than that. I like it more each time I see it, but it turned out to be very, you know, very below average.
it's all a comment on your reaction to that post. You just, you know, here's a bit about...
I was
about...
so joking with you anyway, and you, like, got all butthurt with me.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was totally. I mean, I was totally kidding around. I was poking fun at you, and I was prodding you with the stick because I knew you'd come back with. Actually, I didn't think you'd come back with something like that, but you.
Well, as I was doing in
response,
you got
genuinely geeky pissed.
Yeah, no, I mean we bust balls. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's. I was just returning the ball. I was returning the ball busting.
That's fine.
That's all I'm doing, and that's all I'm doing now. Hey, you know, we're not gonna. You know what I thought we'd do is we'd argue Tolkien for the rest of the show because that's.
please, God, I'd so love to see that. I'd so love to see the readers respond to that when you put up. We debate Tolkien for the entire hour.
Boy, I'm so tempted, but we won't do it. Hey, it's the first show of 2013, and so we're going to start out on a new foot.
And there's a lot going on anyway, so.
By the way, the show is also, and this is a brand new thing, the show is also brought to you by the BobSeska.com Amazon link. Something I just added to the site. It's on the upper right-hand corner of the site. If you're a shopper at Amazon.com, here's what you got to do from now on. You go to BobSeska.com, in the upper right-hand corner, there's a link for Amazon, and it just takes you to the front page of Amazon. It's just like you're going to Amazon.com to buy all your crap. Now, you go there through BobSeska.com. That means we get a commission on everything you buy, and it doesn't cost you a penny more. It just adds an extra step to the process of going to Amazon. So you go to Amazon.
How did you do that? I want that.
Yeah, go for it, man. It's like you go to the site, you sign up. It's like an affiliate program. And what you can do is you can actually make your own Amazon store, where you pick all of your favorite albums and books.
That's what I was going to say. Can I add double-headed d**ks and stuff like that? Like just the most horrific crap.
Well,
that I officially put my my seal of approval on.
I'm not sure if Amazon sells double-headed d**ks, but you know you can try. You can try do a search, quick
that
search.
That banana slicer that has all the comments that everybody's talking about.
But I mean, I had an Amazon store up for the longest time, and I thought, you know, why even bother going through and systematically checking off and selecting different things that I like? Why not just give readers the option of going to Amazon.com through a link on the site? You just go to Amazon and get whatever the hell you want.
Right.
And I still get a piece of the action out of that. So that's...
Thank God.
So please, if you're buying Amazon stuff, either if it's for your business or if it's for you personally or as gifts and things like that, go to BobSeska.com and use the Amazon link. It's in the upper right-hand corner. You cannot miss it, and we thank you in advance. So, new year, new crazy. The Republicans haven't changed a bit, have they?
Not from what I watched. I was in Miami most of the time with my girlfriend and my daughter. And we had a very nice time, and I kind of zoned out from politics to the point where I really didn't pay a lot of attention I didn't pay a lot of attention to the lead up to the fiscal cliff. You know, the last maybe 48 hours of it, though, when it got really nuts, that's when I kind of started really paying attention. And it's just embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, me too.
Embarrassing.
I was the same way because, and we've talked about this before, but leading up to the fiscal cliff in the past month, since maybe a couple days after the election, it's been so speculative and so wishy-washy and fluid. It's really, really difficult to cover something like that and have anything sensible to say about it. Otherwise, you're just getting outraged about speculation. You're getting outraged about trial balloons and red herrings and things that don't even really matter. Ultimately, at the end of the day, they didn't, because the deal that ended up happening didn't have any of the stuff that people were screaming about.
Right. I mean, the only thing that was worth talking about was the fact that it had come to that. That was it. That was the only, why is this happening? Why is this, you know, again, the hostage politics thing, why is it going on? That was the only thing worth sort of talking about. And yeah, the fiscal cliff was such a sort of nebulous concept going into it that, you're right. It was getting pissed about it seemed worthless.
Yeah. Well, we've covered lots of negotiations throughout, the entire Obama presidency, or at least throughout the time that we've been doing this show. And the process of covering a negotiation to me is increasingly frustrating because we just don't know what exactly is happening. We don't know if the president floats chaining CPI. Who the hell knows if he really intends to do that, or whether that's some sort of move to, outflank the Republicans or get some congressional district to do something. We just don't know. To get a vote here or there, we don't know exactly whether or not that's a real idea that's on the table. It might be a bargaining chip. Who knows? You know, it could be a real thing. The president could really seriously want to start screwing around with Medicare and Social Security cuts. I hope he doesn't, but it's a real thing. And in fact, that's one of the criticisms that the left has had in the last few days or so.
Yeah, and I've seen you writing quite a bit about that. It's interesting because I actually haven't read a lot of the sort of criticism from the left, which I tend not to do anyway, or I try not to do, because very little aggravates me in the sphere of political discourse more than that, more than the opinions of those, the idiots on the left who are never freaking satisfied. I will definitely take you at your word that there is a huge outcry from the Fire Dog Lakers and so on and so forth, and those people, and just basically the people who either usually bash Obama or who are looking for reasons to bash Obama, mm-hmm. who are not going to like the deal regardless.
It's extraordinarily frustrating because I came to the conclusion the other day that much like... Well, I'm not even going to make this comparison because it sounds like both sides, but much like the Tea Party, you get almost a boilerplate answer on everything from the left at this point. And I say the left I'm the left, for God's sake. It's just, it's insane that we're so factionalized. But whenever the left reacts to something that the president has done, irrespective of whether that success or failure is his fault or someone else's fault, or whether or not it is a success or a failure. Because this deal was pretty damn good, all things considered.
Yeah, but perfect is the enemy of good.
That's right.
And that's the problem. Unless they get every single thing they want, and they genuinely are in some ways, not completely, but in some ways occasionally as nihilistic as the Tea Party types, because they really do, while they don't have the kind of political clout, and I think that's why they're as pissy as they are as the Tea Party, when it comes to sort of the halls of government. If they don't get exactly what they want, it's like burn the whole thing to the ground.
That's right. And that's what was most frustrating about it, because they were coming out with these, like I said, boilerplate Obama caved reactions. And then once you really start diving into what they had preferred, and God, I'm saying they with regards, I for the longest time, I didn't even know I had a left flank. I thought it was like king of all liberals. I'm driving around a Prius. I'm cutting out beef and pork and like really recycling everything.
If you were genuinely a hardcore liberal, like when I say hard, I mean, look, by comparison to others, you and I wouldn't be friends. Honestly, I just there is the true political extremists on either side, and I will play the both sides meme on that. I can't stand. I can't deal with them because their thinking is so rigid, and their opinions are so intransigent that it's just they're almost impossible to speak to.
Well, in some ways, I find the left more infuriating. It's my left.
No, so do I. Because I find it more infuriating because they're people who should know better.
That's exactly right.
And they're people who ostensibly share, at least, you know, for the most part, share opinions with Barack Obama. You know, and I love it when they argue that, you know, like Greenwald did, that freaking idiot, you know, when they argue that, well, he's not a true progressive. You know, it's obvious that he doesn't really think like a true progressive. It's like, no, you know what? I think he's a progressive. He's just a guy who understands political reality and for that reason tries to govern all of the country as best he can.
That's right. That was his entire goal with this. And he ended up coming out of the negotiation with a deal that was $41 in new revenues, new taxes, versus $1 in spending cuts. That's a huge, huge win.
It is.
Otherwise, normally these things end up 50-50 or 60-40. This was 41-1.
Yeah.
That in the president's favor, without any touching and screwing with Medicare or Social Security. I mean, almost a 5% tax increase on the top bracket. And he protected the bottom bracket. Now, this is where I ended up arguing with Cody K on Twitter for an extended period of time, much more time than I wish I had taken. Because she was saying, I think a lot of people follow Cody K, I'm not sure. But she was saying that it was okay.
You totally made me draw a blank. Who the hell is Cody K?
Cody Kress. Her avatar are like red, white, and blue knee-high boots, like leather boots.
Lovely. Great. So she's Myra Breckinridge.
Possibly. But she was saying it's okay to let taxes go up on the lowest brackets. You know, the lowest bracket. If the Bush tax cuts had been allowed to entirely expire, which a lot of people on the left were promoting, this idea to let all the Bush tax cuts expire, the bottom bracket, the 10% tax bracket, would have suffered a 50% tax increase. Their taxes would have gone from 10% to 15%. That's unacceptable, as far as I'm concerned. It certainly was unacceptable to the president, which is why he said everything below, any income below $250,000, those tax cuts will remain permanent. While anyone above, those will roll back to the Clinton-era tax levels. Because he didn't want the taxes to go up on the middle class, and especially that bottom bracket. These are people making $0 to $8,700 a year. $8,700 a year. And so this woman on Twitter is going, well, it's only $400 difference, $400 more in taxes, you know, to be bumped up to the 15% bracket. Yeah, $400 to someone who's making $8,700 a year, $400 is a lot. That's childcare, that's car payments, that's bus passes, that's 10 visits to the grocery store.
Right, that's the reason why there are a group of people in this country who don't pay anything in taxes or pay very little.
That's right.
Because, yeah, you know what? A little bit of extra money from people who are so far below the poverty line that it's almost unimaginable how they feed their families, that hurts. That kills them.
Yeah. And I certainly don't want that on the liberal progressive movement record, least of all the Democratic Party record. Yeah, well, yeah, we're great. We just raised your taxes. Bottom tax bracket, poorest Americans, poorest workers. We just raised your taxes by 50%. It's insane. We got to take a quick break, come back right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, so the fiscal cliff deal is done for now. It's going to return in a couple of weeks, or a couple of months, I should say.
Yep.
They postponed the sequester, the automatic spending cuts and all that crap.
And then you've got the debt ceiling fight, which Boehner has already said he will no longer, no more Mr. Nice Guy, right. Mm-hmm.
And he's not, Boehner said he's not going to negotiate with the White House
he's
one-on-one
such a
anymore.
Hack. He's such a buffoonish, whichever way the wind blows, whatever he has to do to keep himself in power, country club hack, a political hack.
Well, as angry as the left was about the fiscal cliff deal, clearly. Oh,
the right lost its mind.
The right lost its mind, that's right. And John Boehner narrowly was reelected as Speaker.
Yeah, it's kind of a shocking thing to behold.
Yeah, but it's clear at this point that there's nothing that's going to change the Republican Party. They're just stuck. They're incapable of changing, and the events of the last few days have proved that.
The piece that I wrote for Banter, upon returning from my vacation, was not actually written. Returning, you know, was written while I was returning from my vacation. It was while I was flying because as I was sitting in the Dallas airport, I saw the Chris Christie news conference.
Oh yeah,
which was just I've never seen anything like that before. Mm-hmm. I have never seen something like that. I've never seen such a brutal takedown of a party from within itself.
That's right.
He was just, you know, and credit where credit's due. You know, when Christie wants to be, he can be freaking terrific. And he did, you know, his bluntness and occasional bullying was in fine form yesterday, and it was put to good use because, I mean, he did actually say, and you knew that eventually he was, you know, the party loves him too much. So he's not going to burn any bridges with anybody, and he knows that because they need him and they like him. But hearing him point the finger at House Republicans, not the House, not saying Congress is broken, but saying House Republicans suck and Boehner is not to be trusted, was just, I mean, just the look on my face, I'm like, I can't believe I'm actually seeing this.
Yeah.
You know, between that and Peter King earlier in the day on CNN saying, look, you know what, if you're in the New York, New Jersey area and, you know, you're somebody who supports Republican politics, do not give these clowns one dime more for their campaigns.
My first reaction when I saw Chris Christie was that guy could have walked away from that podium, and if the election had been that day, he could have walked right into the Oval Office almost unchallenged.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was a badass. He was. You know, and the thing that I wrote, I said, I'm like, I do not agree with a large portion of Chris Christie's policies, but there are times when, damn it, I cannot help but like him. And one of the reasons why is because I do like his bluntness, and he is sort of a unique figure in American politics right now who, even though he, you know, the thing he shouldn't be able to duck is like, look, you know, part of me understands that he's, you know, he has to be a political guy who supports, you know, Republican politics. But, you know, the more you watch him sort of rail against House Republicans, the more I kind of think, well, look, dude, you know, you campaign for a lot of them. You know, you pat them on the back. You know, they're your party. They're your people.
Yeah.
But still, it doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, he is the sort of unique figure who can look at the idiots in Washington and point at them and say, you're being idiots, and people will listen because, you know, he's calling out the babies, and he did it really, really, really well.
He's the best thing the Republican Party has going for it right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% yes.
And my question is this, and he's going to run in 2016, and, you know, Democrats ought to be terrified of that.
I think they should, because I think that he, you know, if he continues on this path, he can win. Absolutely.
That's right. Now, my question is whether or not he gets to 2016, he gets into the primaries and battling it out against, you know, wing nuts, X, Y, and Z, thing one and thing two. That he suddenly does what John McCain did in 2004, which is completely tacked to the right.
You know what? I'll tell you what. I think Christie is politically much smarter than that. Much.
Yeah.
I think he will obviously, you know, he can say things legitimately that he's done that will make, you know, the right salivate, you know, because they'll love him so much. But I genuinely think, again, he's a very sort of unique figure in that he can say, look, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to be this kind of guy, and seem like a really instead of seeming like some sort of wishy-washy kind of, you know, like a John Huntsman type. I mean, come off as like, yeah, hell yeah, this is the way to go. This is the way, you know, this is the way we need to be going, the direction. I'm not playing those damn games. You know me better than that. I don't do that kind of thing. And really make that a huge sellable pitch to a good portion of Republicans and certainly a very good portion of independents, and that's all you need.
Yeah, but the question is, is he going to succumb to party pressure? The party's going to want him to be a little more, and because I looked through all of his positions and looked at his record. Now, if Chris Christie were to become pro-choice, and he's really hardline anti-choice.
Yeah, that's that.
And if he dropped the supply side crap and maybe got behind the president on whatever the president does in terms of gun control, Chris Christie could win by like landslide Reagan size margins in 2016. But the problem is, and people thought that about John McCain, because John McCain's this maverick and he's this moderate guy. But then as soon as John McCain ran, and I said 2004 before, I meant 2008. When John McCain ran in 2008, he just completely sold his soul to the right wing of the party. And it all culminated, of course, with the nomination of Sarah Palin. And this is what happened. Now, the same thing could absolutely happen to Chris Christie.
It can happen, but I think Christie sees himself as the new blood. He does. And I think he's smart enough to know that that will benefit him greatly. Mm-hmm. Look, Chris Christie's not a stupid guy at all. He knows that despite his conservative beliefs, the Republican Party is a mess right now. He knows that.
Yeah.
He blamed them. For what happened in the Sandy vote, for putting the Sandy vote off, and he knows. I mean, he's not a dumb guy, and I have to believe that he will embrace what he needs to when the time comes, whether it's 2016 or beyond. He'll embrace what he needs to, and honestly, kind of slough off all the rest and just go his own way and call that the new normal. You know, this is the way we need to be. This is it. You know, I'm the hell with you. I'm going to lead this party.
Yeah.
Well, because that's quite frankly what the Republicans need. They do. They need somebody who is moderate on a lot of issues, certainly moderate on social issues. You know, not you don't have to abandon those, some of the conservative values, but they need somebody who's moderate, and they need somebody who says, I'm not listening to all of that, and you're going to get behind me. Because I'm the one who's going to lead this party, and I'm the one who's going to basically make our rules.
It's really all going to depend on how Chris Christie polls in New Hampshire and South Carolina. Here we are. Welcome to 2013. Bob and Chez talk about 2016 polling.
By the way, you should know that Chris Christie's inauguration is 3 weeks from now. So it's done.
But I mean, I'm looking at this poll from Iowa. And he's not doing too well in Iowa. There was a poll that was put out on the field by PPP, and Huckabee's leading Iowa. I'm laughing at myself because here we are again talking about 2016 polling.
Don't bother with that. And you know what? Screw that. There are always going to be the hicks.
But what I'm saying is, Chris Christie does really, really well in New Jersey because it's a moderate state. But how is it going to play in the South? That's what altered John McCain's entire approach to 2008.
You know, I got to tell you, man, I mean, what the Rush Limbaughs of the world bitch about, which is essentially sort of, not just the Southern strategy, but sort of a, we need more. The problem is the Republicans have lost their way because they're not conservative enough. Basically, the Southern conservatives, the people who make up most of the sort of Southern contingent of the Republican Party, they are the nut jobs. Mm-hmm. They really are. And the thing is, even a Republican can win. I truly believe it. A Republican can win almost the same way that a Democrat wins. By essentially saying, look, we'll get as many of them as we can, but we don't need them to win. Yeah. We don't need to make sure that everything that they want is catered to. If he can be a moderate Republican who appeals to a lot of independents and a good amount of Republicans and even a few Democrats, that's it. He's won.
That's right. That's right. We got to take a break for Bubble Genius back after this. You know, I was going to say, too, about Chris Christie is that a lot of Republicans are still pissed off at him about what they think, the fact that he handed the president a victory after Hurricane Sandy. So I think that's going to be a factor, too.
I know, but again, it'll win him independence, I swear.
But, I mean, really, the guy is unstoppable right now. And so we'll see.
At the moment, yes.
We'll see if he can sustain that, and we'll see if he can kind of hold together his actual New Jersey-style approach when it comes to running nationally. So you never know. Show's brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. It was to me, well, Bob, what is Bubble Genius? And I say, it's easily the best bath and body products you will ever purchase. You purchase them exclusively over the internet. It's all vegan stuff. It's run by liberals. That's what you, the kind of things you want to support: liberal businesses, private, you know, small businesses, independent businesses, businesses run by women. So you go to Bubble Genius and check out their huge, just an enormous selection of really creative and invariably sweet-smelling bath and body products. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Pants. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Do it. Do it. Go to iTunes and sign up. It's free. You get all the shows as soon as they're uploaded. And the promo code for BubbleGenius.com is Bob and Chez, BobAndChez, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. Now, I almost forgot to mention at the top of the show, in addition to the Amazon link at BobSeska.com, if you want to go shopping at Amazon.com, click on that link at the top of BobSeska.com, and we get a small piece of whatever you purchase. It doesn't increase your prices or anything like that. Amazon has an affiliate program, and now we're part of that affiliate program. So go ahead and use that. But also, we're going to be doing this Bob and Chez Show, Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show meetup in Johnson City, Tennessee. That's coming up on the 26th. It's going to be at a bar. We're still working out what
26th
bar.
26th of February.
26th of February. That's right.
Right. Yeah.
It's going to be at a bar somewhere near the Carnegie Hotel. It's got to be within staggering distance of the Carnegie Hotel, I think.
Because that's where we're holding up from police after robbing the local bank. We'll be at the Carnegie Hotel.
It's just someplace that's close enough where we don't need a designated driver. We can wander. We can wander back.
Oh hell yes! you've got it exactly right.
And then on the 27th of February, we're going to be speaking on a panel at ETSU on social media and politics. So that's going to be, and that's open to the public, so you can come to that too and ask us lots of questions. The more questions, the better, because we got nothing good to say right off the cuff. We're just going to need to ask us stuff in order for us to talk. But, I was saying, I think the overall theme of this week's show is Republicans are still crazy. Still crazy. I mean, you see Ari Fleischer, completely tone deaf. When they started to eliminate the deductions for charitable donations above a certain income threshold,
yeah.
Ari Fleischer tweets, and this is the former Bush-era press secretary, "I increased donations to charity in 2012. This deal limits my deductions, so I, and many others, will likely donate less in 2013.
Right, because it's not about what they get. It's about what I get out of it.
That's right. That's right.
What an asshole.
That, you want to see, know what the problem is with allowing the private market do everything without any sort of government interference in what happens with our financial system? That's a good example of it. That the richest people in America need some sort of financial incentive
to do what's right, to do something good.
That's right.
Yeah, and no matter what, there is no truly selfless act. Apparently, for some, not certainly not all rich people, my God, but for some of the very wealthy, it can't be selfless. It's got to be. They truly do look at it from the perspective of, well, look, it's trickle down. I'm giving, So ergo, somebody's getting a lot out of it. Now, if you don't make it as easy for me, you know, if you don't give me something back, then, you know, well, they're not going to, they don't get my largesse. That's how it works.
That's right.
Come on. You know what, you jackass? Just do it. Do something nice.
I mean, at the end of the day, the government has to be involved in these things. Otherwise, corporations, individuals, et cetera, go nuts and screw us all. That's why there needs to be regulation on industry so they're not polluting the water and the air, because otherwise they would, because the bottom line is the profit margin. You know, the bottom line, obviously, for guys like Ari Fleischer is not so much, well, you know, these are some good charities. I'm going to give the normal amount to charities, irrespective of what I get back from the government. But no, I mean, he needs that government incentive to give to charity. He needs to be incentivized to do it by the government.
Right. Because it's all me, me, me. What's in it for me?
That's right. That's right. As we said, John Boehner was narrowly reelected as speaker. Oh, did you see this? Wingnuts all over Twitter were pitching Sarah Palin for Speaker of the House.
I saw you put that up on the blog. Yeah.
Insane. Talk about derp. You know, you can, and this is completely constitutional. The Republicans could have picked anybody, regardless of whether they were in the House or not. Anybody can become Speaker of the House. But the way the system is set up, the likelihood of going outside of the long list of members of Congress who could potentially be Speaker of the House is infinitesimally small. There's just no chance that someone from the outside, least of all grifter Sarah Palin,
Does anybody still give a crap about her, though? Seriously, I mean, aside from, does she turn up on Fox anymore? I think she does once in a while.
Oh yes.
And, you know, by the way, that's the other thing. That to me is the thing that I think I'm not surprised. Certainly not surprised by. But the conservative entertainment complex bubble is still very much there. Fox hasn't changed a bit.
No, not at all.
You know, since the drubbing they took. Yeah. You know, I mean, not one bit. And the reason why is because it really, I'm not sure anything proves sort of like what we're talking about, you know, Republican, Ayn Randian, however the hell it is that they think, you know, what's in it for me, than the fact that Fox doesn't really worry about what they're doing to the political movement by creating this nightmare, because they're getting ratings off of it. You know, They're bringing in people. Although that story that keeps being circulated about Sean Hannity's numbers dropping sharply, I haven't looked too much into that. But it does. It sounds like crap, but I don't think it is.
I want to talk about that and another example as to specifically what you're talking about with regards to Fox News continuing to lose its shpadoinkle. Back after a quick break. Back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
And
More Chiba. Yeah, these are great songs. Yeah. I was listening to More Chiba, I think, more than anything else. So maybe second only to holiday music over the break. I was in a lot of More Chiba for some reason.
It's good stuff.
It's so uplifting. It's actually kind of a, it's kind of a nice antidote to the cheerful holiday music. But anyway, I'm talking about the Republicans before the break. I don't know what the story is with Sean Hannity. I haven't looked into these numbers, but my suspicion is that almost everyone's numbers went down after the election, maybe with the exception of Rachel Maddow. I think Maddow's.
MS is, I think, have held somewhat steady, but I know Maddow's have been terrific.
But I think the number was that Hannity went down, like lost half his audience, basically.
That was what I saw. I mean, that's the article I saw. And I saw it briefly, you know, and a couple people have kind of thrown it my way.
But I mean, typically what happens after a presidential election is people are burned out with politics and they simply don't want to watch anymore. And they certainly, you know, blog traffic goes down too. It's just people have had enough. They're burned out a little bit with it and they want to take a break. And so when I first saw the Hannity thing, I thought, well, maybe that's just a symptom of that.
Right.
But I remember after the 2004 election, feeling crushed about John Kerry's loss, even though I was never a huge fan of John Kerry. I just wanted to defeat George W. Bush. After that election, I was clinging to any liberal media that I could get my hands on, like a life preserver. You know, I was like, I was like the end of Titanic, clinging onto that door floating in the icy cold waters of the North Atlantic. Just whatever I could get my hands on. I was getting, like, buying up books on tape of things I could listen to. I was, you know, dialing up Air America as much as I could. Just MSNBC blaring on television all the time.
No, I didn't do that. Because I didn't want any kind of confirmation bias or to sort of try to give myself confirmation bias, but I absolutely didn't watch or listen to right wing media because I didn't want to be reminded.
Yeah, well, I was looking for just some iota. I was just hoping for, again, another screw up or something to occur with, oh, maybe they lost a bunch of ballots or something. Maybe this is horribly wrong. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, by rights, Hannity's numbers should have gone up after the election, of just like disaffected and pissed off, sad, depressed.
You know, the thing about Sean Hannity is that Hannity is the, I think, the one person at Fox who is, he is a Republican. That's it. You know, he's not even conservative. He's a Republican. He is a party guy the entire way. You know, he never gives an inch. He is, you know, whatever the talking points are, he is staunchly behind the party. And I don't really know whether that had some kind of impact on what people thought of him. Also, Hannity was, you know, Hannity's show was like the main show that hosted a lot of these pundits who came on and said, oh, yeah, absolutely, going to be a blowout. You know, the Dick Morrises of the world. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe he paid a price for that.
So, I mean, one of the things that indicates the utter tone deafness on behalf of the Republican Party, the one of the indicators that they're seriously just not going to change. And this whole business of Republican outreach to all these demographics that they kind of ignored throughout the campaign and just didn't get any votes from, consequently, just it's not happening. Because here was the one of the most infuriating examples from this past week is the House Republicans let the Violence Against Women Act expire.
I did see that
this
yeah.
week. It was up for renewal. It was first passed in 1994. And if you're seeing it on Twitter, you're seeing it by the crappy liberal acronym VAWA, which is, you know, I'm just going to say a bit about this. The Republicans always have great names for their legislation. You know, the first one that pops to mind, the USA Patriot Act, the Healthy Skies Initiative. We have things like VAWA.
Yep.
How can you get the word out about something that most people don't even recognize and will not be able to recognize based on an obscure acronym like VAWA? And we wonder why we lose.
It's shocking when you think that they made patriots stand for something. You know, like, I loved that. It was an acronym. That was brilliant.
So the oh yeah they did, that's right, Patriot actually stood for something.
I can't remember what exactly it was, but man, yeah, it's. Holy hell, that's great.
And we've
that takes creativity.
And we've got DADT or DOMA, you know. Yep. Just kind of, God, marketing people, marketing. Anyway, so they allowed the Violence Against Women Act to expire for the first time. First time it's not on the books since 1994. You know,
well, I guess I know what I'm doing tonight.
That's awful.
Going out and I'm committing rape.
That's awful. That's awful. But not under these House. These Republicans is not going to have it. Given their track record, this is from Feministing. Given their track record for doing nothing productive for the American people they were elected to represent, it's not surprising that they would throw victims of domestic violence and sexual assault under the bus because they want to ensure no assistance is given to Native Americans, LGBT people, and immigrants. That's right. That's right. Because it would extend to all of those groups. They can't have that.
So I read the thing that has to do with the Native American population. I did. It's one of the first things I read about the story.
It's absurd and clearly an indication that they have no desire to make any moves towards reaching out to women. So good.
No, they're not. And I mean, the good thing about the Republicans, and when I say good, I mean, you know, good for their enemies, is that there's something that they don't, it doesn't go away. You know, they constantly keep doing things It's not like, you know, us with our short attention span. Oh, you know what? We'll forget the rape comment from however long ago. You know, we get a chance to forget that because, yeah, it keeps coming back. Mm-hmm. And they keep doing the same stupid things over and over and over again. So it's, you know, they constantly remind you what they're all about.
Well, you know, speaking of things that keep happening over and over again, and I, you know, I always have to debate with myself whether or not I even want to go down this road. And I certainly stared at my computer screen for a considerable amount of time yesterday, wondering whether I should write a piece about it. And one thing that has been perpetually frustrating is every time there's a massacre or some sort of gun violence that sort of grips the nation and takes over the news cycle for a while, it always ends, and everyone's, well, we got to have some new gun control laws, got to have some new regulations here. And then it just dissipates. The bell-shaped curve is completely soul-crushing. To look at the coverage of gun control before Sandy Hook, during Sandy Hook, and now, I mean, now we're at a level of news coverage. This is news coverage alone of gun control issues that are basically the same. It's about the same level as it was the day before Sandy Hook.
Yeah. Well, it dissipates because, you know, we have news cycles that turn over every 24 hours and we have a 140-character attention span.
That's right.
Nothing sticks anymore.
But even people who aren't part of the news media aren't really talking about it anymore.
No, and it is a shame.
Yeah.
You know, it's a real shame. And I still think that there's hope on this one. You know, because there are still at least some people talking about it, and it's, you know, I still think about it, and it's horrible. I mean, you know, I still can't get a lot of it out of my head, and I'm hoping that somebody sort of gets organized about this in the wake of this and takes, kind of like the 9/11 wives, somebody takes some of these people and makes them willing to stand up and say this can't happen again to keep the story going. Because, yeah, you have to keep the story going.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
People will forget. No matter how horrific, people will forget.
We absolutely need leadership on this. We need people to keep this at the top of the list or towards the top of the priority list so that something meaningful gets done. Because while the rest of us are asleep on gun control and we clearly are back to our, I almost hate to use this kind of terminology, but pre-Sandy Hook mentality. While we're doing that, the NRA never sleeps. The NRA is still scheming and devising and strong-arming members of Congress and figuring out how they're going to completely derail any effort. And so the pressure has to be kept up. We don't always have to sit here and ponder Sandy Hook and the awfulness that took place there. But the discussion about gun control has to continue. Otherwise the entire thing becomes utterly, utterly hopeless. And when I say entire thing, I'm talking about a wide range of issues. Because then you have to ask the question, what does it require in America for us to start to take seriously things like the climate crisis or gun control? What sort of disaster needs to happen? How can we change from being a reactive to society to a proactive society? People who see the problem coming down Main Street and want to take care of it at that point, rather than after it's already steamrolled you.
We are a reactive culture. We're a reactive culture when it comes to anything.
That's what I find completely frustrating.
You know, believe me, I know, because I just flew. You know, you got to do is fly. All you got to do is fly and see that you have to take your shoes off and you have to keep liquids in a bag. Something you never had to do before some idiot, you know, tried to use it against us.
That's right. And that's what's going to end up happening in schools rather than what needs to happen, which is we got to get the guns. We got to get the assault weapons.
Yeah.
We got to get the extended magazines and so on. And that leads me to the next topic, which is, and segues nicely with the idea of needing someone to lead us on this. And I'm speaking at the government level and even more specifically, the president. Congressional leadership. Because, I mean, what we're seeing now are proposals that are half measures. You know, it's bad, bad, bad negotiation tactics to say, okay, well, you know, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get we're going to do another assault rifle ban, and we're going to get the extended magazines. Maybe do a little bit more on background checks.
Well, you know, if the Republicans hadn't hijacked everything with the fiscal cliff negotiations, and they're going to do it again with the debt ceiling, and they're going to, you know, the Sandy Hook story would have stuck around longer. That controversy would have stuck around a hell of a lot longer as the sort of front and center news item.
Yeah, yeah. And with the way cable news is run and the way the internet is run, there's no reason why you can't have multitasked directions on this. Why you can't have a debate about the fiscal cliff and a debate about gun control and a debate about climate and a debate about energy and foreign policy all happening at once. It's not like there's not enough time, you know, if you have a 24-hour news network to work all of this stuff in there.
No, you're right, actually, because I as a producer, I was always much happier when there were a lot of big stories to cover rather than – You know what, this mindset that, well, you know what, we want to really make one thing and just, you know, they call it flooding the zone. You know, we just want to flood the zone and we just want to blow it out. And that's our coverage. We're blowing that out.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to own that story, which, mm-hmm. You know what, shut up. Seriously. You're right. You got all this time to fill this gigantic news hole and you got so much space and you got a crap ton of correspondence and resources, and you can very easily, you know, do one thing with one hand and one thing with the other.
Well, if there's one thing blogging proves, is that you can blog about all kinds of different topics. You know, you can go from a post about the climate crisis to a post about gun control, the presidential election, fiscal cliff, on and on and on. And you're giving solid coverage to each thing. You know, maybe one post is longer than the other. It doesn't matter. But there's no reason why cable news can't do that. Instead, you get each of several hosts doing the same, their own take on the same goddamn story.
That's exactly what it is. Actually, that's very true. I mean, that was one of the hardest things for me to sort of get my head around when I did, when I worked in cable, when I worked for MSNBC and CNN was, yeah, all the shows, with one or two exceptions, all the shows pretty much do a lot of the same stories, and they just do their own kind of take on it.
That's right.
And it's nothing all that special.
That's right. And that's one of the reasons, again, it does sound like a broken record on this. It's one of the reasons why Rachel Maddow's show is so great. Because she covers a lot of things that no one else is talking about. I mean, I'll routinely turn on Rachel Maddow and see a news story that I never even heard of before.
Right. And my favorite thing about her is that she'll lead with those.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think that's right. Ballsy. That's right. I absolutely love that.
That's right. So, I mean, to me... going back to the president and the congressional leadership, what I want to see on this from Democrats is something more than just a half measure on gun control. I want to see a real effort come out of this. I want to see them start with, like, the Australia law, okay, and then start negotiating. Don't start with something that's going to absolutely get whittled down by the Republicans. So we're starting with an assault weapons ban. So now we're going to get back to where we were in 1994, where we're debating what constitutes an assault weapon. And then that gets whittled down even farther. You know, and the same with extended magazines and the same with background checks. Start from a strong position, goddammit. And then we can start talking. But this whole this whole business about starting with these same old laws that we've had before and just trying them over again is really frustrating.
The thing about this particular debate, though, is that nobody wants to be seen as being anti-Second Amendment. Yeah. You always get the sort of equivocation, you get the disclaimer that, well, look, you know what, nobody wants to take away the rights of lawful gun owners. And by the way, I'm one of them. I understand, you know, I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with owning certain types of guns. You don't need every type of gun. But I think that's what it is. I think it's whoever proposes this kind of thing, it comes off as, well, you know what, you guys just want to take away our guns and you feed that kind of paranoia. But yeah. I agree. I don't, especially after Sandy Hook, I don't really give a crap. You should still start with that harsh negotiating position.
That's right. And maybe someone somewhere has to start taking a serious look at the Second Amendment. I mean, there are lots of things in the Constitution that were originally written into that document that really no longer apply to a modern world. The three-fifths clause comes immediately to mind.
Right. It's a, you know, it's a, it's, I've said this before a bunch of times, it's a biblical way of looking at things. And it's something the right does very well. There's a reason that the right, you know, the hardcore right constitutionalists, as a, you know, constitutionalists is such a big word now, why they tend to also be really religious, because they believe in the infallible word of the Creator.
That's right.
You know, the infallible word of the founding fathers, whether that founding father is George Washington or Jesus. And well, you can't, you know, you don't argue with the word.
That's right. Unless you want to make sure that assault weapons are part of the founding fathers' original intention for the Second Amendment.
Right, or that men and women, that, you know, gays can't get married. For that, we got to change the Constitution.
Hey, listen, After Party is tomorrow. Make sure you sign up. It's $6 a month. If you haven't already, go sign up at bobsesco.com. $6 a month. You can cancel anytime, and you get at least 4 shows a month, except when there's holidays. Then we kind of take a break. But go and do that. We got lots of stuff to talk about, more politics and some movie things and Fred Willard, Andrew Sullivan, current TV, Al Jazeera, lots of stuff coming up on the After Party. That's tomorrow at noon Eastern. Friday's noon Eastern. Take care, everybody.
See ya.